Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cara, acne can be tough. Whether your kid is just starting to get breakouts or has been struggling with them for years, there's a great product that can help.
Phyla is the ultimate game changer. It tackles acne right at its root cause, rebalancing the skin's bacteria and packing it with probiotic phages.
Phyla harnesses the superpowers of probiotics, tiny warriors targeting and wiping out the acne-causing bacteria. In studies, Phyla slashed acne-causing bacteria by a whopping 90%.
Phyla doesn't just fix acne you can see. It stops new breakouts in their tracks. It has no harsh chemicals and won't irritate or dry most skin. Phyla's three-step system is like a dermatologist-approved magic potion. Cleanse, apply serum, and moisturize twice a day.
As a special treat for our listeners, you can grab 25% off your first order of Phyla. Head over to phylabiotics.com, enter code PUBERTY at checkout, and kickstart your family's journey to acne-free skin. Check out the link in our show notes for quick access.
Hi, I'm Cara Natterson.
And I'm Vanessa Kroll Bennett.
And we are obsessed with flipping puberty positive.
Puberty is a stage of life best described as a roller coaster of physical and emotional shifts. It happens to literally every human being on earth. And it shouldn't be cringy. It should feel, you know, pretty comfortable.
Which is why we started this podcast and a newsletter, and why we film slightly ridiculous but informative social media videos.
It's why we have a brand that makes clothes that literally feel so comfortable, and why we write books too. Our latest is This Is So Awkward, Modern Puberty Explained.
We have built a universe of puberty positivity, and it all started with this podcast.
We are so happy that you're here.
Just wait until you hear what Chelsea Gooden has to say. This is a conversation unlike, I think, any we've ever had before, Vanessa, because Chelsea has a foot in a door of expertise. She is an academic tutor and a mentor and has been doing this for a decade and a half and has been in the lives of teenage girls for years on end, many, many, many of them from all walks of life. But she also has a foot in the door of having come from screenwriting and storytelling. And so she wrote a book, which is both incredibly insightful about teenage girls and how underestimated they are. It's called Underestimated. And she does it from the sort of vantage point of a talented storyteller who pulls you into the content in a way that I've just never experienced. And then talking to her is even better than the book. And the book is amazing.
And she's the perfect example of when we talk about finding trusted adults or helping your kids find trusted adults who are not you. And having someone they can lean on, they can open up to, they can trust. Chelsea is the perfect example of that because she's honestly modeling to all of us what we could all be doing, which is doing a hell of a lot more listening and a hell of a lot less talking. So we have no doubt you will find this beautiful and meaningful and helpful as you care for all the teen girls in your life. Enjoy. I am so excited for this episode because this book, and I'm going to read the full title, Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls, speaks to me on such a bone deep level. Like my soul feels seen. And I feel like so connected to you, Chelsea, and all of the young people that you interview in this book, because this is what's going to change the narrative about teenage girls in this country. And so just a moment of gratitude for you having written this and the work that you do to, we rewrite the narrative about puberty and you are rewriting the narrative about teenage girls. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for this book.
Oh, thank you. I received that so much. Thank you.
Well, I mean, we started this conversation with you before we pressed record by telling you, and now we want to tell every listener, we read a lot of books. I mean, it's obscene how many books we get, and we are readers and we read them, and we read a lot of books about teenage girls. And I've never read a book like yours. Literally never. It is deep and it is hilariously funny and it is sassy and it is incredibly thoughtful and insightful. It's like, it's just like, you know, sometimes, you know, when you're watching, I want to say a mini series, but that's like the 1980s version of what it is, like a series, and you just want to see the next show. That's how I felt about each chapter. And so we are going to talk to you about you and your thinking and your experience and your life, but we're teeing up this conversation with a huge push for people who are looking to read something refreshing and different and wide-eyed. Just, we'll link in the show notes, Underestimated. It's an incredible, incredible book.
Thank you. I'm like emotional. Thank you.
I mean, it's an emotional experience reading this book. So let's start big picture, and then we're going to whittle our way down to specific topics. What does the world get wrong about teenage girls? And you can't say everything. That's the only answer you can't give. So give us like a framing to go down this path with you, Chelsea.
People love to squash, fear, dismiss, minimize teenage girls. And it can be in their language and how they stereotype them as emotional and dramatic and crazy. It could be like that. It could also be just the act of not listening to their thoughts and including them in conversations and respecting their ideas and instead trying to just advise and fix and just slap a ton of shoulds on them. They should look like this or should do that, or they need to be perfect or likable in this or that way because then we'll protect them. And the truth is the girls themselves are extraordinary. And when they connect to just their authentic self, whatever that might be, it's incredibly wise and powerful. And they are actually have so many thoughts on how we could create a better framework of a world that would invite their voices and their power. And then that could go into womanhood, because so many of these wounds we have as teenage girls carry straight into adulthood.
Talk to us about how you know all this. Give us a little background, your experience, because it's very unique. What informs your voice is actually fabulous in its singularity.
Yeah, I started just tutoring as a side job 16 years ago as I was screenwriting. And I just had all this one-on-one time with girls. And I realized how valuable those conversations were and how they kept saying these things that were just so much smarter than I felt like people gave them credit for. And then I started volunteering my time too to help girls from underserved communities. And I realized just how, you know, across the country, there was such a crossover in the types of things they were sharing with me, and that I was somehow creating a safe place for them to really share deeper stuff that they weren't sharing with other adults in their life and coming to me on some of the most serious topics of their life. And I realized how much I was being called to be like a portal for them to mm-hmm. share what they want to say to the world and a microphone for their voices. It's not that I'm not trying to come in here and like give practical parenting advice. I mean, there's tons of parenting tools in there, but that's just out of the mere fact that these girls have told me what they need and what they want. And I'm just trying to communicate it.
I mean, you're literally, you're coming into their kitchen, their living room, you're in their homes in, you know, not every case, but in a lot of cases. You're in their space and their parents or the adults caring for them are watching the evolution of these individual relationships you're building. And they're handing off an element of not of their job, but like where they're limited, they see that you have legs. Can you talk about that piece a little bit and sort of maybe paint a picture of what your experience with one child, one kid might be like from when you first meet them to when that handoff happens.
Yeah. Right. Because they are coming to me usually when their kid is struggling with something. Mm-hmm. Right. And then oftentimes you hire a tutor to come in and like fix it, right? Like mm-hmm. make it better. And I actually, when I first start with a parent, I always will usually say like the day when you guys are in a disagreement about something, I need you to know I'm going to take the girl's side. I'm going to take your daughter's side no matter what. And they're always like, what? You know, they're a little thrown by it. And they're like, okay, but I'm sure nothing will come up. And then of course something comes up and that moment's referenced. But the reason is the girl needs to know I'm fully on her side, fully her advocate. And the truth is I'm really, again, just trying to translate. I'm very much a translator for what they want to say and a parent can hear it better. And I do fill a space that parents aren't usually invited to. It's a pretty mm-hmm. rare space. And I'm kind of trying to share the secrets out from that space that I wasn't invited to. And it doesn't mean it's not accessible though and attainable. Like I think in this book, I give enough practical tools to give you entryways into creating that type of relationship and connection.
Yeah. So let's run with that a little bit. Cause like in our book, we have a whole chapter about overarching strategies for talking to and communicating with kids, right? There's like some guiding principles that all of us have in our work that informs like the specific pathways into areas. And we'll get into things like perfectionism and talking about sex and body image. Like we will get there in the episode, but I'm wondering, Chelsea, if there are some overarching strategies. You mentioned some stuff earlier, but like, what are your kind of guiding lights in getting the best out of teenage girls?
Well, my first big one, and it all seems so simple, is phrase everything as a question with just genuine curiosity, with no secret agenda, no judgment. Honestly, judgment and shame are the things that will cause the walls to go up. So how do we do that? How we release that shame and judgment? We're all a little triggered in our own stuff oftentimes when we're approaching harder topics to talk to a teenage girl. So a lot of times it's also go deal with your stuff so that you can come to a girl with, you know, an open heart of like truly just wanting to meet her where she's at and listen. And then phrase that as a question with curiosity. It's like, what do you think about that? How would you like to handle that? What do you think the solution is? What are your thoughts on that? How does that make you feel? And then give her a voice in that and respect it and affirm it and be like, oh, that's a smart thought. Cool. And then don't add more. Don't try to fix it. Don't try to advise. Don't try to slap positivity. Truly just affirm her voice in the relationship.
And it's authentic for you. I mean, you are genuinely curious when you come into these. So is that a tip that you have for the parents who are listening is, find the curiosity or fake it till you make it. Just, you know.
I guess you can try to fake it until you make it, but I think it really is important to look in your heart and see what are the topics that you feel you can just have curiosity about. I mean, there's some easier entry points. Like in the book, I get in really intense conversations with girls, but, you know, just watching a TV show, the same TV show with a girl and then being like, well, what do you think? Why do you think she likes him? Or why do you think he likes her? Like actually wondering what she thinks about that with genuine, you know, it can be simple. And those are all really easy portals into deeper conversations.
And I think it's the kind of thing, it's a practice that you get better at, right? Yeah. So like, I think, Cara, to your point, sometimes when we shift strategies with kids and we employ a new approach, it can feel disingenuous. And it's like, I'm asking this kid, but like, really? I'm like, super freaking out about like why they failed their test or how they could have possibly failed their test, where Chelsea over here is like not their parent. So she could be like, huh, I wonder what happened. Whereas I'm like,
let's get curious.
I wonder what happened. Whereas inside I'm like basically about to vomit my dinner all over the table, but it does get easier. Like for those of us where we're not another trusted adult, but we're the primary trusted adult, it can feel disingenuous. But as someone who has practiced this over and over with my own kids, it does get easier and kids can begin to predict. And Chelsea, I wonder if you have this with the girls that you work with, like they can actually begin to predict the questions you're going to ask and like make fun of you for those questions and answer it in an anticipatory way because like you do develop that. So like my kids, I've said this before on the podcast, my kids will be like, okay, I know what question's coming next. Like what strategies could I have used differently so next time I don't have the same outcome? And I'm like, yes, thank you. And then they'll answer it. Like, yes, they're making fun of me and they're employing it. So I don't know, Chelsea, if you get the like eye roll mockery while also appreciating asking.
I don't get the eye rolls because it's a different vibe. It's not a parent vibe. It's the more of a friendship almost vibe. But I will say how you said it could come off disingenuous. Teenage girls love radical honesty, right? I have a whole chapter on radical honesty. And so actually I have a solution to that. Is tell them what you're doing, like that you are going to reframe and try a new approach. That's what I mean. Like, don't underestimate involving the girl in the conversation at every level. So you're like, hey, so I just read this book and I realized I have been doing some things wrong. Like, I have not been approaching you with ways that help you feel respected and heard and seen. So I'm going to start asking you more questions. And I want you to know that I don't have an agenda. I actually really am just curious. So maybe in the past I have had that and you felt that, and I'm sorry about that. And now I'm actually going to try a different way. So if it's going to seem weird at first, like, I just want you to know what's going on. And a girl will be like, oh, okay, cool. She just got real with me. And that really opens up a connection in a different way.
I mean, it's like, we always use the phrase, you know, narrate the experience. So it's that, give them a window into what you're doing. You had one other comment early in the book, which was amazing, about the 90-second neurological response to an emotional sort of wave. And you describe yourself being at a party and feeling overcome with sadness and you just wanted to cry and you cried for 60 seconds and you had a friend who sort of pulled you aside and you gave him a hug and that was done. And it was because you've done all this work understanding that if you let an emotion go in the moment, then you don't have to manage the after effects of packing it away. And then you cite a Harvard neuroscientist who actually has a lot of data showing if you give yourself 90 seconds to let the emotions out, you're good and you can move on. And I thought that was another wonderful way in, not just to the book itself, but into conversation with kids, is if it gets heated, if it gets emotional, to give space, give that 90 seconds, right? And just let it out and let it, and then it's out. And it's done.
Yes, exactly. And it's also just simple responses. So often, you know, we feel discomfort by seeing a kid in pain, expressing these difficult emotions. So that's where we want to fix and help and come up with solutions. The truth, what is so much more effective, at least what I've experienced, is that if you're just like, that's hard. Yeah, that sucks. Oh, I get why you'd feel that way. A girl's body relaxes. She's like, oh my gosh, thanks for understanding. No one understood what I was going through. And all I had to do was reflect back. And I always listen for the emotion word she's using. If she says that was disappointing, that was frustrating, I'm like, yeah, that sounds disappointing. And then she doesn't feel crazy, right? Like she's not like, oh my gosh, I'm bad for feeling this. Cause girls do take it in as their identity if something bad is going on. Instead, we can build resilience for this emotional space.
Right. I mean, getting back to your original comments about what the world gets wrong about teenage girls is like the way we label them, the drama. And, you know, you talk about letting girls feel their feelings, but how hard that can be and not knowing how to react. And we hear from parents all the time, like, and we talk about it in our keynote. It's like, it feels like there's a tornado tearing through your house. And you're just left there as like the dining room table is turned to like sticks and firewood kindling. So one thing that you just mentioned is kind of narrating back. You talked a little bit about not fixing. What do teenage girls tell you they wish their parents would do in these scenarios where they're like, where the tsunami is like rolling through? You have so many wonderful insights. What do they tell you they wish their parents would do?
Yeah. Well, first of all, girls can be messy for a second too. Like, we haven't had a lot of space for girls and women to just also have a moment where we're messy and maybe we're grumpy and we're not pleasing everyone around us, you know, and we're actually just feeling our feelings. And turns out as a human being, we have some negative feelings sometimes, and that's a normal human experience. So I always make sure a girl doesn't feel alone in that, because oftentimes they do. They feel like, oh my gosh, I'm bad because I'm feeling this because everyone else seems to think that it needs to be fixed, right? And instead it's like, no, we can be angry sometimes. And by repressing that, it does more harm later. But so in terms of, you know, that fixing, what girls have told me, it so often feels like criticism and judgment and shame. And so that's why the wall goes up. And whatever fixing idea you have isn't going to be heard or accepted anyway. And if she were to do your advice and then it doesn't go well, she just blames it on you anyways, right? What I love to do is empower their choice in the situation. And so that's why I'm always like, okay, great. What do you think the solution is? I love that sentence, you know? And then she, honestly, her ideas are often better than mine. And then she owns it. She wants it to work out, whatever her solution is. And let's say it doesn't work out because she's still figuring things out. She learns from the mistake fully then too, because it was her choice in the first place. So activating and empowering that type of choice on both fronts, whether it works out or not, I think are both good things.
Can I go back though? Sometimes what you'll describe is, what do you want to do or what do you want to happen? And the first answer out of the gate is, I don't know.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. So can you walk us through, because it's so important, how you get past that?
Yeah. Okay, great. I love practical stuff like this. So if a girl says, I don't know to me, which is totally normal, you know what I do lots of times? I'll just be like, okay, like you don't know. Let's sit in the not knowing for a second. You know, just acceptance. There's a lot of acceptance and just that being okay also. Maybe she doesn't know. And you're not going to then tell her your way is the way to know it, right?
I'm dying. I'm thinking about all the people listening to this episode thinking, I have never said in response to my kid saying, I don't know, and you saying, okay, well, let's sit in it. Like, I have never, ever.
Usually it goes like this. Well, here are some 12 ways through
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Or right? What do you mean you don't know? Like, yes, you do. Just sit and think about it. Come on. Like, what the hell? Right? Like, yeah. Never is an adult turning to a kid and be like, cool, let's sit with that for a bit. Like, yeah. It is so radical, Chelsea.
Oh, I love this. And it's not only just, okay, then I'll affirm and I'll be like, you know what? I trust you that you're going to figure this out. I trust that you're going to kind of get new thoughts on it. Like, do you want to talk about it again tomorrow? Or like, do you want to talk about it later? And actually, when I usually tell her that I trust her thoughts on it, that's actually when she starts thinking.
Yeah.
Like, she actually is like, wait, yeah. Okay. Someone trusts me to actually think
that. Also, words never uttered. Like, you got it, dude. Yeah.
I trust your thinking.
I trust your thinking.
What happens when their thinking is colossally stupid? Like they come up, okay, I have a great way through, Chelsea. Here's what it is. And they say something that you're like, oh boy, that's...
I mean, has that happened? Like, this is where I feel like they're underestimated. Because this is when I do say, hey, I trust you to come up with good ideas. And what I'm doing is I'm creating a mechanism for her to actually look within.
Right.
And check herself and be like, wait, what are my thoughts and feelings about this? So that I don't know is honestly just kind of like a defense mechanism, a pattern that has been set up where she hasn't created the muscle of checking her own thoughts and feelings because they haven't necessarily been respected or given a voice enough. And so I'm just building out that muscle. So maybe the muscle starts not super strong, but at least like whatever idea she comes up with is a way in. It's a step into her feeling stronger in that.
Vanessa, we literally have 3 minutes to eat lunch every day. I am not joking. And the challenge is how to make it delicious and healthy and still fit into that tiny window. Our answer is Factor's ready-to-eat meals. They have been a godsend.
We throw our Factor meals in the microwave. It takes 2 minutes and out comes a gorgeous, fresh, never frozen meal. We both love the tamale vegetarian one. It's delish. There's a ton of options every week. There's 60 add-ons, breakfast, snacks, beverages. I love doing the wellness shots with my kids. They think it's hilarious and I know they're getting vitamins and minerals in their bodies.
So get meals on your table or at your desk in 2 minutes or less. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning. You can customize with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can press pause or reschedule depending upon your lifestyle.
So to order, go to factormeals.com/puberty50 and use the code puberty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That code is puberty50 at factormeals.com/puberty50 to get 50% off your first box, 20% off your next box. And I am going to go do that right now because I need more Factor meals in my refrigerator. Cara, lately I have been lying awake at night. I'm physically exhausted, but I can't sleep because my mind is so wired with everything going on between work and my family. So I've added Magnesium Breakthrough to my nightly routine, and it actually helps calm my mind. It helps me get better sleep, and I wake up feeling better rested. I'm less cranky, and I'm more patient with my family and with you.
Oh, I've noticed. And it's because, unlike other magnesium supplements that might give one or two formulations of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough has seven. That's why you're sleeping so well and waking up refreshed. Now, dietary supplementation is always best, Vanessa. So that means eating your minerals and vitamins is the best way to get them in. But if you can't or you don't get enough, Magnesium Breakthrough is the way to go. It can also help digestion, though too much helps your digestion too much, which is not a good thing. It can support muscle recovery. So bye-bye, Charlie horses. And it helps build dense bones, which is especially important for women approaching and in menopause.
We have an exclusive offer for our listeners. You can go to buyoptimizers.com/puberty, buyoptimizers.com/puberty. And you can use the code PUBERTY10 during checkout to save 10%. That promo code is PUBERTY10 at buyoptimizers.com/puberty. Your body and brain and family and business partner will thank you.
Cara, my kids love Magic Spoon cereal. And even though it's cereal, they actually love it as a homework snack. The variety pack has four flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. And fruity is the favorite flavor in my house.
Now, this pack has 0 grams of sugar, between 13 and 14 grams of protein, and between 4 and 5 grams of net carbs per serving. It's made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and it's high in protein, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So a great choice, Vanessa.
You can go to magicspoon.com/puberty to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our, you guessed it, promo code PUBERTY at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident you're going to love their product. It's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they will refund your money. No questions asked. They do not want you to send their cereal back to them.
Try a bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/puberty and use the code PUBERTY to save $5.
So let's counter that with a big part of the book, which is the topic of perfectionism. And no one on this podcast has ever grappled with the desire to be perfect and a fear of failure and making mistakes, right? We are all just totally comfortable screwing up and being imperfect and making our way through it, right, Cara?
Oh my God, yes. It's just gonna, I'm gonna try to empathize with this conversation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, see if I can. Absolutely. Yes. I see you. So we're full of SHIT. And on top of that, we may be raising daughters who also, like, this is a collective memory, systemic issue, harmful cycle of perfectionism, right? So it's not just our mothers and ourselves, it's also potentially our children.
And our children, I would say, crosses a lot of these topics, cross gender boundaries. Yes. And this is one of them.
Yes. So Cara has children of all genders who grapple with perfectionism. I don't. I have children of, I have a child of a gender, female, who grab my boys are very comfortable in their imperfectness.
I would say actually, I see the boys much more comfortable with making mistakes. I mean, not that it can't hit boys too, but boys don't take it as a core identity affliction. Like a girl makes a mistake and she's like, oh, I'm bad. I'm a failure. And it hits their insecurity. Right.
The guys I know through my son, through my practice, all that, I agree with you. They might grapple with perfection, but when not reached, the way they manage it looks different. Because society tells them it should look different.
Also, my husband's so deeply imperfect that I think they have a really good role model of imperfection. Whereas I, you know, it's hard to spot.
Hard to be your daughter.
Yeah. But I'm making light of it mostly because it's such a tough subject, which is it's so painful to watch kids get like you know, an almost perfect score on a test or get like a couple of comments on an essay or make a mistake in a sports game, whatever it is, have some like minor degree of imperfection and have it just stop them in their tracks in such a harmful way. How do we break this cycle of imperfection? Like, what are the strategies you use? You talked about one already, Chelsea, which is like putting the ball back in their court and having them exercise the muscle of working through stuff when it doesn't go well. What are some other approaches that you like?
Well, you know, bring up the gray zone, right? Like, this is a binary thinking. Either you're like a failure or you're perfect. And perfection does not exist. And that seems to be a sentence that's very new and radical to teenage girls when I'm constantly, well, perfection doesn't exist. I say it to them all the time. And there's a little bit of that narrating technique you were talking about where I'm constantly permissioning that middle gray zone space where I'm like, okay, well, maybe you just, you know, I talk about a story in there where a girl's just so anxiety ridden and just going through so much because she was scared she was going to get a bad grade on something. And I was like, you know, what if you do get a C? I still think you're amazing. You have nothing to prove to me. I know you're brilliant. Like, that C doesn't represent your worth. And I say that out loud to her. And that is a radical idea to them. I've seen girls get emotional when I say that to them. And it's not that a parent maybe to, I know a parent doesn't actually think the grade is their kid's worth, but we aren't giving voice to a space where we're not saying that out loud in a big way. And so what happens though, it's not that they end up getting the C. Everyone's always worried that I'm permissioning them to be mediocre. That's not what happens. They just relax and they there's less tension around the whole situation because they're not gripping to an intangible perfection outcome. And when they relax, that's when learning and growth and the actual beautiful things that need to happen happen. Or they find that maybe something else is their thing, by the way. Like, you know, we're so often trying to make them perfect at everything. And sometimes something isn't their thing too. And we need to let them release it and not feel like they have to be great at it.
I mean, grades in particular strike me as the hardest one to argue here because there are five of them, right? An A, a B, a C, a D, and an F. By the way, I just learned that there were E's for a while, but that's a whole other podcast. But there are five, and straight A's would, in a very narrow kind of thinking, seem to appear as perfection. And I think what you're saying is even that very objective measure, first of all, it's not very objective, and second of all, that's not perfection. And so how we have defined value, how we have defined success is, you know, it's on us to start shifting those definitions and those values a little bit. And I could not agree more that when people relax, that is when the body and the brain can do its thing. I mean, if all you need to look at is infertility data and talk to women who have gone through infertility treatment, it's sort of remarkable to look at the data about when the pressure is taken off, what the success rate of a pregnancy is. It just changes, right? Yeah. So it's like, I know it's not grades and school and high school, but it's the same, right?
When I do test prep, which I'm not test prepping anymore, but like ACT, SAT, it's not even that I need to teach the material. I'm literally just coaching their brains as they take the test to not, you know, be gripped intensely to an outcome because it creates fear. And fear just blocks the brain and prevents actually what you want to happen.
So when we think about perfectionism as it relates to body image and beauty and appearance, and we'll get to sort of like the beauty industry down the road and how we can rethink it. What role does reframing the concept of perfectionism play when we talk to girls about their bodies and their looks and all of that? What do you find that they wish adults would say to them?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, no comments on their body is what they want. They don't want any commentary on their body. And in terms of what they wear, I mean, I talk about how, you know, this starts at such a young age where what you say to little girls, the first thing you usually say is, oh my God, look how cute you are. Look at what the pretty dress you're wearing. Mm-hmm. Even though it's well-intentioned, it is telling a girl so young that her worth is tied to what she looks like. Meanwhile, little boys were like, what's your favorite subject in school? What sport are you playing? You know, and between 8 and 14, I'm sure you know the statistics, girls' confidence drops by 30%, and not boys. And of course, that's when they hit that beauty range. And so of course they're they get a lot of information from the media and society about what they should look like, but I can't change everything. You know, I can't change the entire culture and media as much as I would love to, but we can look at ourselves and how we're participating in this narrative. And so I bring up one that the girls have told me a lot, which is not only like, they really, of course, it seems obvious they don't want their moms to comment on their body and their looks, which moms have gotten better about. It's actually also women in their lives commenting on their own body and mm-hmm. their own looks around a girl. And it has this huge impact, and the girls hate it. And that I have girls who've struggled with eating disorders who can literally will put their finger on, oh, well, my mom dieted every single year, all the time of my entire life. And her mom is doing that in her own kind of world. And by the way, I have total compassion. We're all victims of the same broken system here, right? But it models a behavior that really impacts girls.
That's right. That's right. And I think often the line is used, they do as we do and not as we say. And I think that's, you know, when it comes to perfectionism and body image, there's no better example than exactly that, right? The self insulting and sort of negative talk and dissatisfaction and sadness that gets reflected down generationally is really, really profound.
Oh, yeah. I see girls use the exact same words as their mom. I mean, it's really direct impact onto them.
You can also say, like, you're not going to love every part of your body. Like, you're not going to love every essay you write. You're not going to love every score you get. You're not going to love every part of your body. And that's okay. Like, bodily acceptance and sort of avoiding perfectionism also means like you don't perfectly love yourself either. And I think that's important to remember.
Yeah. And I talk to, you know, I help the girls kind of find what they do love and bring energy to that. And also, I try to create a lot of just levity of us, like just laughing at the whole craziness of it all, of what women deal with. Whenever I bring laughter and levity in it, it doesn't hit so hard.
Yeah.
Show examples of women who they think are beautiful or sexy who aren't your normal body type. And they love leaning into that and talking about that. That the more we, again, can just permission so much more space for them to attach to rather than singular perfection models that we see everywhere.
You talk about an area that was like, oh my God, it just hit so hard, was the it's fine reality and this tendency for not just girls, but women also, but we're going to talk about the girls that you work with, where the response to unkindness, to disappointment, to a whole variety of things is for them to say, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Why is that so dangerous? And how do we change that trajectory?
So this I highlight in the people-pleasing chapter. You know, and we think of people-pleasing as just slapping the smile on and stuff, but this is actually the more subversive, harmful one, which is when she says it's fine, there's pain going on inside, and she's trying to make sure she's still presenting to the world that all is fine because she needs to make sure everyone's happy with her or she looks perfect because then things will be good and stable and she'll be seen as good and stable, because if she actually reflected what was going on, it could be dark and then people might not like her as much or they'll judge her and she'll feel shame and judgment. And it's also putting other people's needs before her own when she says it's fine, because she's making sure everyone around her is comfortable. And when a girl says it's fine to me, I'm like, it's not fine. That sounds awful. Like, do you want to just talk to me about it? And I'll be tell you, like, yeah, that sucks. And she'll just be like, wait, really? Like, someone's just willing to listen about like how awful this is. And again, it's that holding space for the feelings without trying to fix it. And then It also, by the way, teaches her what's not fine. So often they're saying it's fine to really horrible things. And so when you say, no, it's not fine, let's just sit with that. That gives room to that. But then when we get back to, again, her having space for her needs, her checking in with herself and being like, so a question I'll often respond to that is, how can I support you in this? That's another question I use all the time. And you might hear again at the outset, like, I don't know, right? Because we're just building that muscle for her to understand someone is actually asking her, how can I support you in this? And she has to think for a second, you know? So the girls that usually the way in is lots of times them just being like, oh, well, it's nice to have you just listen. And I'm like, okay, great. Let's do that. You know, let's start there, you know, and it expands from there.
Can I pivot from it's fine to standing on its own to it's fine about sex? We can talk about sex a little bit.
Yeah, I have a whole sexuality chapter. I swung for the fences in that one.
Before we pressed record, I asked permission to read from this book, which regular listeners will know I never do. And then I said I was going to read three paragraphs, and I was quickly put in my place by one Vanessa Bennett. That three paragraphs is really long. So I'm going to read a truncated version of the beginning of your sexuality chapter, partly because it sets the stage for this part of the conversation, and partly because it just, for anyone who's wondering what your voice is like in the book, which is a version of your voice on this podcast, but just a wee bit sillier and sassier. And so it's like an awesome place to be when you're reading this book. Here we go. Is that okay with you, Vanessa? Oh, can I read this?
Yes, you have my permission.
Notice, Chelsea, I didn't ask you who wrote the words. I asked Vanessa. Okay, here we go. I found that the topic of a teenage girl's sexuality exposes the most gripping, overpowering, alarming, toxic, and understandable fears. It's a space full of so many charged opinions that I'm certainly gonna step in some shit here, but I'm up for it. You may disagree with me at times, but having this conversation is too important and cannot be avoided. As often as I witness words like pregnant, STIs, or rape ignite people's fears of teenage girls' sexuality, I also see the words pleasure, orgasm, and clitoris ignite just as much fear, possibly more. This conversation is all just one big forest fire ignited by fear. So let's do this. Let's jump into the fire together, feel the heat, maybe even get burned, but still, hopefully, learn how we can eventually turn this into a campfire where everyone is sitting around discussing, connecting, and having a good time. I mean, come on. Aww. That is the best. So let's talk about sex as a campfire. Let's go to the sort of sexual violence, sexual harassment piece of this conversation, because girls talk to you about this a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to start there. The chapter. And so the journey of the chapter is one from sexual violence to a conversation around pleasure. So, you know, it's a full arc here because we need to take the chains that are holding us back off before we can really be free and liberated in this space. And yeah, I have unfortunately had a lot of girls share with me about their sexual assault or their friend's sexual assault, and I'm usually the first person who they come to talk about it with. And that's why I'm on the board of A Call to Men, which is a nonprofit all about ending gender-based violence by focusing on men and boys. That's kind of the linchpin here, because girls just are so tired of feeling blamed and responsible for the entire sexual assault epidemic, right? And it's truly, you know, if women and girls could have ended sexual violence, we would have done it by now, right? It's actually a male violence issue. And I say that with compassion. I feel like the same system is harming them too. And what if we actually focused on why this violence is starting in the first place? And there's actually very practical issues, like only 11 states teach consent in their sex education curriculum. That's horrifying. It explains a lot why there might be issues around consent, and boys are confused too. And, you know, teenage girls feel like no one's talking about this, right? One in five girls on college campuses are sexually assaulted. And that's horrible, right? And no one's talking about it in a way that's at the level that they see it. So they feel a little crazy, like, and they are mature enough to be able to handle these conversations in a way that we're on their team. We're not debating them or blaming them or giving them solutions on how to fight it. We're actually just like, yeah, this is bad. Like, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, I actually started working with a call to men because I'd had so many girls come to me. I knew I needed to do something to be a part of the solution. And so now girls really trust me because they can see I'm actively being trying to be a part of the solution. And then once we can get rid of those shackles, and I mean, they don't have to, that doesn't necessarily have to happen first, but everything can happen at the same time. Then we can turn to a conversation. It's like, boys also have a lot of permission to, you know, in the media to seek pleasure with sexuality and stuff. I mean, that's totally fine. No one thinks twice about that. But a girl seeking pleasure? I mean, I feel like I'm saying a radical sentence here, right? And why is that?
And you talk about Peggy Orenstein's book, Girls and Sex, which we just love so much. And her takeaway, one of her takeaways is that boys approach sexual experiences expecting pleasure and girls approach them hoping for a pain-free experience. Like, that's the dichotomy. And like, of course, no sexual assault, like, yes, that shouldn't be the baseline, is like hoping they're not assaulted. The baseline should be hoping they have like respectful, loving, pleasurable, humanly connected experiences. But again, nobody's talking about that. In order to get there, though, Chelsea, to your point, we have to hear what their experiences are. And so often girls feel like we don't want to hear what their experiences are. Like, we're shutting them down either because it's too much or too dramatic, or, you know, well, we don't approve of their clothing choices anyways, or the pictures they're posting on Instagram, right? It all feeds into the same point, which you get at over and over, which is like, stop judging them. Stop shaming them. And so I don't think you step in a pile of shit when you talk about the importance of pleasure. And I would totally sit around your campfire, your sex campfire, or whatever it is.
Your sex campfire.
We might need to cut that part because people are going to be like, are they starting like some kind of nudist colony? So the metaphorical,
right?
The metaphorical sex campfire. But I want to get at where this is taking us, which is how social media and media in general informs the lives of teenage girls and also reflects the lives of teenage girls and then informs it again, and how the adults demonize how they participate, what they consume, you know, the whole cycle. So what do you hear from girls? Like, what do adults get at baseline so wrong about their relationship with media and tech?
Yeah. I mean, I see a kind of a hardline villainizing, this is the source of all the problems that a parent wants to put on social media. And by the way, I'm never going to not admit, obviously, there's problematic things about social media. But what I am trying to say with this book is it's not going anywhere. And a girl is not feeling understood or even met, even an inkling where she's at, if you are just coming at her with fear and like she's a victim to it, right? Like, that's what we're teaching her. Whereas I've been in the trenches of actually helping empower her to make healthy choices herself, like a media literacy relationship, which is really a boring way of just saying we talk about these things and I hear her thoughts on it and help her process through them. And I'll be like, well, what do you think of that image on there? Do you think like she's just posting that to get likes? Like, what do you think? And again, it's a true curiosity so that she can be like, respected in her own evaluation of it. Well, you know, this and that. And she starts forming her own barometer of what's healthy for her by, again, just coming at it with questions, curiosity. And I've seen it work. That's why I want to share it with the world, because that's actually a hopeful thing in that social media is not going anywhere. And I will say something back even to the sexuality conversation in this one too. When a parent has a hard time with these conversations, I always ask, well, what makes you uncomfortable? First, figure that out. Figure out why you're uncomfortable with it and go deal with that. Like, that's your work to do. And instead, we come to a girl with a ton of assumptions and projections that are often our own wounds, our own triggers. And I say that again with compassion. We all have them. But that's what I've seen work, is when you can deactivate that first. And you're, because of course, we all have baggage around our sexuality. Like, of course we do. But a girl will feel that. And then she will take on those same wounds oftentimes.
I mean, I found myself when I was reading this book thinking, first of all, you're like the greatest tutor hire ever. Like, help with math, and by the way, solve all social problems. You know, it's like these parents won some serious lottery finding you. But then what I was struck by was your insistence in the way you write about this, that parents can't just hand this all off, that you are not there to be outsourced to. You are there like a mirror, and you're just going to reflect back to them how they can do it differently. And that was the beauty of the way that you navigate all these different kinds of conversations in these different homes, and very different homes, right? Different economics, different numbers of kids, different setups, different learning issues, different ethnicities, different everything, right? And yet it seemed fairly consistent that your role has become essentially to be a mirror and to help parents and the adults who care for these kids see how you do it so they can do it too. And when it comes to sex, I guess my question would be, do you have a little script, a little piece of advice, a way in for the parents that does that, that mirrors how you do it?
Well, I never offer, you know, just across the board solutions, because I actually am super trying to cater to individuality. But I will say that a portal in is, again, I'm going to bring it back to a TV show, especially sexuality conversations, and because romance, love stories. I mean, I talk all the times with girls on the love triangles that saturate girls' teenage shows. And we get in deep there in a lot of things, and there's levity and fun to it again. And it's not like trying to be cool, like watching the same thing as your girl. Again, it has to be genuine, like, oh, I like this show. Oh, that was interesting. You know, not like a forced vibe of trying to bond with her about it.
Like Amy Poehler and Mean Girls.
Yeah. It's really a foundation of, like, I feel like TV shows really provide a foundation for conversations that is a way in. And you can start gauging what they're ready to talk about too. That's another thing. Some girls are ready at 11, you know, some girls aren't ready till 15. And so you can start being like, what do you think about that? And the way they respond, you can kind of see their maturity.
Oh, you'll know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're in really bad shape when you are watching a show with your teenage daughter and you're like, this isn't bad. And she's like, this is terrible. We need to turn this off. And you're like, oh my God, my bar is so low. Chelsea, I want to close with a very hot issue that's we've done an episode on, I've written about, it's all over the news, which is teenage girls and beauty and skincare and, as we call it, the Sephora gate, how teen girls are taking over Sephora, and the temptation for women of our generation who deem ourselves feminists and are like total discomfort with girls' relationship to beauty. You take a unique approach to it in your work. And again, it comes back to like lifting our shame and judgment. Talk us through how you approach this.
And I come from the background of like hiding my beauty or like thinking that that was something I shouldn't lead with, you know, that type of feminist generation. But this wave of feminism that Gen Z is a part of is that women can be all things. We can be smart and pretty and sexy and, you know, all the things. And I've really had to lean in and accept and understand it and ask a girl when she's putting on that makeup, like, why is she doing it? What part of herself is she trying to express, you know, and then be cool about it and be like, oh, I get that. Because I've learned their relationship to their clothes and beauty is actually their exploration of their identity, and they're exploring it still. And they're learning how to figure out, am I into this? Do I want to wear this? And the more that, again, we judge it, then we're kind of judging their identity, because that's one of the main sources for them to explore it. And, you know, the beauty, like even makeup and stuff, I used to be so judgy. And now when a girl ends up talking beauty stuff with me, she feels safe. And then that opens more availability for deeper conversations too. So it's like, why do I need to stay gripped to me saying, oh, you just care about beauty standards, when actually her feeling safe around me to talk about everything provides the actual connection, honesty space that we really, really want for the harder stuff.
I love that pathway about it's a gateway drug in a good way. It's a gateway towards having like open, authentic conversations with kids in general. I love, yeah, people will have to read the book to read about Chelsea exfoliating her lips. That's like my favorite part. I was like, oh shoot, am I supposed to be doing that too? I have to add that to my list.
Totally.
Oh, Vanessa.
Silly me. You are so wonderful. This book is so fantastic. And the way you use girls' voices, the way you provide insight into their reality, I think is going to help so many people feel renewed empowerment and optimism that they can have these conversations with the teen girls in their lives. This is a great book and just a great life philosophy. So thank you for putting it out in the world. And we are so appreciative.
Ah, thank you. This was so wonderful. Both of you have such incredible insights and questions. This was so wonderful. Thank you.
We absolutely love hearing your feedback and getting all your questions. So anytime you want to be in touch, email us at thepubertypodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for great puberty products, like the Oom shorts or the Oom socks or the Oom bra, do you get the theme there? Go to myoomla.com. If you want more content, you love what we do on the Puberty Podcast, and you want to have us come speak or learn more about our book or subscribe to our amazing newsletter, The Awkward Roller Coaster, go to orderofmagnitude.co. Remember, it's .co because we don't have enough money to buy .com. Yet.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.